This is The Guardian.
Today, what does the ICJ ruling on genocide mean to Israel?
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
The sitting is open. The court meets today to deliver in open court its decision.
After 2 days of testimony and 2 weeks of desperate anticipation, on Friday, the International Court of Justice handed down its ruling at The Hague. Carefully, methodically, 17 judges from across the United Nations analysed the case put forward by South Africa on whether Israel is engaging in genocidal acts in Gaza. Tension pierced the courtroom, and at least some of those claims were deemed plausible.
The State of Israel shall, in accordance with its obligations under the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, take all measures within its power to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of Article 2 of the Convention.
The fallout has been dramatic.
The charge of genocide leveled against Israel is not only false, it's outrageous, and decent people everywhere should reject it.
It could take years for a conclusive verdict to be reached. In the interim, the ICJ has ordered Israel must act to prevent genocide and for more humanitarian aid to be allowed into Gaza. But instead, over the weekend, 11 countries led by the US, UK and Germany have withdrawn funding from the biggest aid agency in Gaza. The news comes in response to the Israeli government's new allegations. Israel claims that a dozen workers from UNRWA, a UN-led organisation, were involved with Hamas and the October 7th attacks.
The Secretary General has been briefed by the Commissioner General of UNRWA, Philippe Lazzarini, regarding extremely serious allegations which implicate several UNRWA staff members in the terror attacks of October 7th in Israel.
The consequences for Gazans are difficult to comprehend. War is raging, with already limited access to food and medicine.
Officials said 90% of Gazans routinely face days with nothing to eat at all, and they forecast the onset of outright famine unless something changes.
How will Palestinians continue to survive on the Gaza Strip? And how will the ICJ enforce its orders against Israel? From The Guardian, I'm Nasheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, the ICJ ruling and the defunding of Gaza's biggest aid agency. Patrick Wintour, you're The Guardian's diplomatic editor, and you were no doubt watching closely on Friday lunchtime as the International Court of Justice handed down its ruling as to whether Israel, as argued by South Africa, is committing genocide in Palestine. What did the ICJ judges have to say?
I think they had a number of things to say, but probably the most important was to say that there was a plausible case that Israel was committing genocide, and that required further investigation. And I think that in itself is an extraordinary thing for a court to have said. I mean, it's true that the bar of what is plausibility in committing genocide is not that high. But nevertheless, for a country such as Israel, which was born out of a Holocaust and genocide and born out of centuries of persecution of the Jews, it is an extraordinary charge to have laid against it. So that was the starting point. It then went on to say that South Africa, which was the country that brought the case, did have a locus standi, a reason to be taking this case to the International Court of Justice. And that's important as well, because it means that other countries have a duty to prevent genocide. It then went on to examine the degree to which humanitarian aid had been constrained by Israel. And the two orders that really mattered that they gave was, one, that there should be no constraint by Israel on the amount of aid going into Gaza, and that it should be much more in line with a UN resolution that had been passed in December saying that there needed to be an uplift in aid. And the second order that mattered was that the Israeli government should constrain ministers that were inciting genocide or deemed to be inciting genocide. And there was a requirement that the Israeli government report back on that.
In the court's view, Israel must take measures within its power to prevent and punish the direct and public incitement to commit genocide in relation to the members of the Palestinian group in the Gaza Strip.
What it didn't do, it didn't say that it was necessary for there to be a full ceasefire.
And how did Israel interpret that? How did Israel respond?
Well, Israel's response has been twofold, really. One is to express anger that anyone had ever brought this case, from their perspective, deeply wounding that anyone should make that charge against Israel. But in terms of the detailed response, they've been boxing and coxing a bit and saying that, well, we're already doing the things that we're being required to do by the court, so this has no real impact on the way in which they conduct activity.
So you think it won't change their calculation?
I think it's interesting because on Sunday, the Israeli Prime Minister said that it was necessary for the groups that were trying to prevent aid going into Gaza to stop doing so. There's been a group, there's a mixture of hostage families and right-wingers who have been trying to block the Kerem Shalom crossing and prevent aid going in. And I think he was aware that if he didn't say something to the effect that that shouldn't happen, he could be potentially in breach of the order. But I don't expect to see a vast change in the amount of aid going into Gaza. And part of the problem is because the conflict is so intense close to where the crossings are.
And what about the military campaign itself?
I think the military campaign is, if anything, stepping up. The number of deaths that there have been since, say, the court order is in the hundreds. And I don't see that changing. I think there's huge pressure on the Israeli Prime Minister to try to bring this military conflict to an end and to a clear conclusion. Because at the moment, the reports coming from American intelligence is that Israel's not making as much progress as they intended. The number of tunnels that are still extant is very high, and they haven't really managed to capture any of the senior Hamas command. So a lot of the progress that Netanyahu's promised has not happened.
And what about the response from the Palestinians? I mean, did they see the ICJ ruling as something of a victory?
Yes, that's true. I think they did see it as a victory because the Palestinians, via South Africa, had their day in court. Secondly, there'll be another practical impact, which is that Arab nations will try to pass another UN Security Council resolution in New York and impose the decision of the court via a Security Council resolution. And that will present a dilemma for America as to whether they... it's framed in such a format that they feel the need to veto it. And then America would be accused of trying to veto the decision of an international court. So that's very important as well.
Patrick, what does all this mean for Israel's allies and the support that they're giving?
Well, it's led to a division in terms of the response. I think Britain has largely been very critical of the ICJ, and I think that's a difficult thing for them to do because they support the court in principle. America's also been very critical. But even within the UK, there's been an interesting division for the first time about this whole issue, because there's been such sort of bipartisan kind of consensus around how this crisis should be handled. And the Labour Party was very clear in saying that the court ruling should be respected. That was a difference in the way the the government responded. So I think that is interesting. Otherwise, most of the responses were predictable. But it does put pressure on Israel's allies to know that a court has made a ruling as it has.
Patrick, over the weekend, there's been another story concurrently running alongside this ICJ ruling. Allegations from Israel about a UN organisation, UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, that provides aid to Palestinian refugees. And the allegations were that some of its employees were involved with Hamas. Can you explain more about what's going on there?
Yes, I think in the days before the International Court of Justice ruling, the Israelis put to UNRWA the fact that they believed as many as 12 members of UNRWA staff had been involved in the attack on Israel mounted by Hamas on October the 7th. And these allegations were so serious that the Commissioner General, Philip Lazzarini, then went to New York to speak to the UN Secretary General about these findings. And there were then very urgent consultations with some of the key donors about how UNRWA would respond. And I think UNRWA was very keen to get ahead on the story and not to be seen to be just solely responding to what the Israeli allegations. And on the Friday, just sort of literally hours after the ICJ judgment, UNRWA put out a statement saying they'd had to sack, I think it was 9 members of its staff, and they were mounting an inquiry by the sort of largest investigative body inside the UN in New York. And the effect in America was, at least in amongst the American media, was to effectively wipe the ICJ judgment off the front pages. And that then snowballed, because over the weekend, far from Lazzarini being able to assuage the key donors, there was a steady hemorrhage of support.
Patrick, what do we know about these UNRWA workers, and how credible are Israel's claims?
Well, I don't think UNRWA leadership would be responding in the way that they are unless they thought they were serious. And there's been some leaks, I think, via the Israelis, which to the effect that they have the names of some of the individuals they believe were present in the attacks. And they also seem to have been able to geolocate via individuals' phones where they were on October the 7th, and that they were present in Israel and present at some of these really horrific slaughters. So I think the allegations are credible. The detail to be checked but with others, because I don't think it's fair to say that either the American or British intelligence can independently verify what they've been told by the Israelis.
And do we know any more detail about these workers allegedly involved?
These allegations via the New York Times are that 7 of the accused were teachers in UNRWA schools, and they were focusing on maths and Arabic. 2 were working in schools in other capacities, not as teachers. And then finally, there were 3 others that were storeroom managers, clerks, and a social worker. I mean, UNRWA has 13,000 employees in Gaza, has 40,000 in total across the Middle East. And I guess it would be surprising if you have 13,000 staff drawn from Gaza, there will be a lot of antipathy to Israel amongst that staff. But that's one thing. Another thing, though, is to be involved in this kind of violence.
And what has been the response outside Israel to these allegations against UNRWA employees?
Well, there's been a snowballing effect of different countries deciding to either suspend for an indefinite period or for a specific period the money that they will give to UNRWA. And I think there's now got to the point of 11 countries that have done so, led by some of the biggest donors. So it's very, very serious.
The Foreign Office has announced that the UK will be joining the United States, Canada, Australia and Italy in suspending funding to the UN Relief Agency in Gaza.
I was speaking to UNRWA staff yesterday, and they were making the point that they don't have a big cash balance. They don't have assets like a lot of other organisations, and they live a sort of almost a hand-to-mouth existence. So this kind of loss of funding, if it is indefinite, is going to be very, very serious quite quickly. So one of the issues will be, is there other agencies to which Western donors can turn very quickly to ask them to supply the aid? One member of UNRWA was saying to me that you have to realise that UNRWA is almost the de facto authority in Gaza. It is a huge organisation in terms of its importance, in terms of education, distribution of aid, and for it to be effectively dismantled altogether in the space of a fortnight, that's going to leave the whole kind of transmission mechanism for aid into Gaza being absolutely broken.
So you've mentioned there's 40,000 employees, UNRWA employees across the region, 13,000 in Gaza itself. What are we talking in terms of the level of funding? I mean, do we have any idea of how reliant the agency is on the donors that have now said that they're going to be suspending their money?
The sources I spoke to yesterday said that if this continued, that would mean 80% of their funding would basically disappear. They are very much more dependent on, curiously, more on Western countries for funding than they are from Arab countries. So I think you would have to see whether some of these Arab countries would be willing to stump up the cash at very short notice. It's not absolutely clear what these countries that are withdrawn funding are demanding of UNRWA. They're saying that they're shocked by what's happened and they're suspending their funding, but they're not absolutely being very specific about what UNRWA now has to do, because they have already sacked the people responsible. So what do they do next?
Patrick, given everything you've said, to withdraw funding now seems really drastic, especially given all that we know, everything you've described about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. How do you think this is likely to play out on the ground now?
Personally, I don't think it's tenable for UNRWA to be destroyed at this point in time, given the state of, particularly now, southern Gaza's level of military assault. The day-to-day life of Gazans are already unbearable, because I think we're so close to very deep states of hunger and disease that this is really perilous. It's not possible for the West simply to stand by and say, because we are so outraged by the fact that there were 9 members of your staff allegedly involved in this attack, we are going to cut you off. I just don't think that is feasible politically and tenable, and I think there will have to be some compromise reached in the next few days.
Coming up, what happens next in Gaza, Israel, and across the region?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Patrick, taking these two stories together, what do they mean for the war ahead?
I think that that's a lot of the momentum that would have come out of the ICJ ruling has been dissipated by these allegations. It's just the nature of the sort of media beasts that's happened. And I think it's put Israel in a stronger footing than they would have been otherwise. I'm afraid to say the war ahead looks long, and I must say, when this whole thing started, I would have no thought that we would still be in this level of military activity in this point of time.
Nonetheless, there have been negotiations initiated by Qatar, Egypt and the US over a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas over the last week or so.
The progress that we are making in the last couple of weeks is we are in a much better place than where we were a few weeks ago.
Where did they currently stand?
Well, there's a lot of secrecy surrounding them, which is not surprising given the sensitivity of the negotiations. But there were certainly talks in Paris on Sunday in which the CIA director, Bill Burns, was present. And he is a consummate diplomat. But the task is so difficult because Hamas wants a permanent ceasefire and Israel is willing to offer a 1 month, 2 month ceasefire, and then a resumption of hostilities. And that is quite a long way apart. And you have to know when you're going for peace whether both sides think it's in their self-interest to do so. And I'm not sure that Hamas at the present time really think it's worthwhile. If they give up all the hostages, which is one of the Israeli demands, they lose one of their best bargaining chips. It's not how I would like to describe them, but that is the reality of how Hamas sees them. And I don't think either the ICJ ruling or the accusations being immense against UNRWA are really going to change the dynamic of those negotiations, which I think are being driven more by the state of the war and the broader kind of political axes around both Israel and America.
Yes, in a moment, but right now we've got this breaking news. Three U.S. troops were killed and at least two dozen more injured in a drone attack on a small U.S. outpost in Jordan.
Patrick, we also saw on Sunday three U.S. troops killed in a drone attack in Jordan, many more injured. So if a ceasefire isn't looking likely, how much worse could tensions get across the region?
Well, that is the great worry. The longer this war goes on, the chances, just almost mathematically, of there being a really serious escalation grows. And we already have forms of conflict going on in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. And now these attacks were in Jordan. And this is the first time we've seen American servicemen killed by Iranian-backed militia since October the 7th. There were two US Navy SEALs who were drowned, but I don't think they're not classified as having been killed in action. So this is a very serious moment. And what we're most worried about, and what everyone has really been looking to avoid, and both sides insist they don't want to happen, is a direct conflict between Iran and America. And we have, as a result of what happened on Sunday, edged closer to that now.
Well, that sounds terrifying. Patrick, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was The Guardian's diplomatic editor, Patrick Wintour. Do follow all his analysis and more as this story develops, and you can find it all on the homepage live blog at theguardian.com. That's all for today. I'm Nisheen Iqbal. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent and George McDonough. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producer was Huma Khalili. We'll be back again tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.